Well, now my fire alarm's going off. I don't know if you hear it.
It's all good.
Unless he's burning, for God's sake. You know?
Yeah, I know.
This podcast was so hot, guys. We torched my partner.
This is episode 206 of Bourbon Pursuit. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny, and as usual, a little bit of news. We've announced here on the podcast of all the distilleries on Kentucky having multiple million and billion dollar expansions because the bourbon boom isn't stopping, it's not slowing down. And in 2016, Buffalo Trace began making their progress on its $1.2 billion infrastructure investment. This started off with four new barrel warehouses and a $50 million bottling hall that is now nearing completion. New barrel warehouses AA, BB, CC, and DD have been built and are filled with barrels that will continue to age, which will eventually fill around 70 million bottles of whiskey. Now, this is all located on what's called Whiskey Farm, which is a 200-acre plot of land adjacent to Buffalo Trace. The fifth new warehouse, EE, is taking shape with constructions of numbers 6 and 7 that are be planned for the end of 2019. Each of these warehouses are unique because they are heat cycled during the winter months. Even with its limited stock and having to wait for age to do its thing, Buffalo Trace is committed to not raising prices or diluting proofs to fill more barrels. Last week on the roundtable, we discussed, would you ever drink a marijuana-infused bourbon? Well, this show takes it kind of in a whole new direction. You can't discount the impact that marijuana is currently having on states that have legalized recreational use. There's now more research and funding looking at the impacts of marijuana, not only from a medicinal use, but also its economical impact. Of course, liquor industries are curious, and they want to make sure that this isn't going to hurt their sales. But will it? Who knows? But I can't be that expert, so we're going to find out from our experts today. So we have David Osgo, the chief economist at the Distilled Spirits Council, and Clay Bush, vice president of Heavy Grass. They joined the show to talk from their respective sides of the table. So those for its widespread use, and those look at the precautionary look of the potential impact of marijuana on the spirits business. Now with that, let's hear from our friend Joe over at Barrel Bourbon, and then you've got Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
Hi, this is Joe Beatrice from Barrel Bourbon. Batch 16 was a project that took over a year. We selected 9 to 15 year old barrels with similar profiles from different distilleries. It's deeply concentrated, but not too oaky, and finishes with a toasted orange note. Find out more at barrelbourbon.com.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. My wife held her belly and said, "Freddie, it's time." We jumped in the car. I drove 90 miles per hour to the Clark County Memorial Hospital. And nearly 24 hours later, our first son, Oscar Leo, was born. It was a complicated birth, and we chose this hospital because it specialized in natural birth, even though we didn't end up having a natural birth. That's a whole nother story. Why am I telling you this? Because I regret falling for that hospital's marketing plan, as my son does not have Kentucky on his birth certificate. Don't get me wrong, I love Indiana, the people, the food, the cities, but we're Kentuckians. And there's something special about being born and raised in this state. And while I love my home state of Oklahoma, I'm a proud Oklahoma State Cowboy, Kentucky embodies a state pride you cannot find anywhere else. It's in every cask of bourbon, horse galloping in the meadows. The state is an amazing state. And when you travel outside these borders, folks look at you as if you know something because you live in Kentucky. If you're bred, born, and raised here, that's like an extra 10 points of cool. I think there's even a t-shirt for that. But for bourbon in particular, being from Kentucky gives you more cachet. And if you're from Bardstown especially, it's as if you were baptized from the holy barrel of Booker and Parker Beam was your godfather. The gravitas is real. And if you ever drank with a Kentuckian in Bardstown, you know why. It's our mecca, our holy place of American whiskey. And it's important to me that my sons live and love the Kentucky pride. After all, as my wife says, they're the sons of bourbon. And that's this week's Above the Char. Hey, do you have a cool take on Kentucky? Let me know. I love this state, as you know. I'll retweet it or share it on Instagram. Hit me up, at Fred Minnick. That's at Fred Minnick. Until next week, cheers.
Welcome back to Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of Bourbon. Kenny and Fred here in attendance today, talking about a subject that is, I don't know, it's a little bit hot, a little bit tipsy, because it is two controlled substances, and figuring out exactly where do the legalities sort of fit in, where do one compete with one another too, because this is a market after all. And I don't know, Fred, do you think this is just considered the all out sin podcast?
Well, if we had beer, yeah, we would. We could be able to throw that on there. And big beer is not a fan of cannabis growth. And so when we look at marijuana and American whiskey, there seem to be a lot more compliments than competition. In a lot of cases, a lot of consumers do both, and then the distillers don't seem to be as afraid of the introduction of marijuana legally as beer companies do and wine and wineries. But at the same time, here in Kentucky, we still have a lot of dry counties, and in some districts, you smoke weed, you're going to the devil. So we see a lot of like prohibition era mindsets when it's applied to marijuana.
Yeah, I typically tend to agree with that. However, the one thing that we have seen within the changing laws of marijuana is that it's starting to break down barriers a lot faster than probably what you'd see in a lot of things in regards of alcohol too, from California and Colorado and the whole entire nation of Canada is now recreational. So you're starting to see these things coming, and I think it'll be harder for entities to try to stop slowing its roll, because it's a product that is probably going to eventually make its way out, and marijuana in general, recreational marijuana, to the vast majority of the United States over the next few years. And that is why we have brought in our guest today to talk about this and what could the potential impact be on bourbon. So we have got David Osgo. David is the chief economist of the Distilled Spirits Council, as well as we have Clay Bush, who is the vice president of Heavy Grass. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, so Clay, I'll kind of go with you first. This is a bourbon podcast after all. What's your sort of tie-in with bourbon? Do you drink it? Do you have a few bottles? Is it are you a cocktail guy? What's sort of your avenue?
In a previous life, I actually used to help produce bourbon festivals, which is how I met Fred. I've always been a traditional Tennessee whiskey Jack Daniels guy, just growing up naturally. And in college, Jack and Coke was always my go-to. That's how I was introduced to whiskey. But as I did more shows in Kentucky, in Louisville specifically, met with Danny Wimmer Presents and the festivals that we did there, because I used to be a promoter with Danny Wimmer, we really got to know and educate ourselves in the bourbon. So I'm a bourbon fanatic. I had a good collection, but being in California, it's hard to find the good stuff. So I'm running out, but a big Blanton's fan. He is probably my go-to. If I could ever like have a, one sip of one thing, Blanton would be my go-to.
Nice. What about you, David? Do you have a particular bourbon that you gravitate towards or anything like that?
Oh gosh, that's always a loaded question when you're talking to someone that works for a trade association.
All right, then we'll blanket it somehow.
Let me just say there are a lot of really wonderful products out on the market, and I enjoy most of them.
it was about as generic as we could get.
That's a very good answer.
All right, are you running for a Senate in 2022?
No, but I'd like to keep my job in 2019. So.
Although I could, David, I imagine that your plank would be pretty good. You would just be talking about reducing excise taxes and reducing tariffs. I mean, you'd have all kinds of people voting for you with that kind of language.
Well, we are quite popular with a good portion of the public, and we're just hoping to bring the Congress around along as well. So, we've had some tariff issues, but we're hoping to get past them so that the Europeans can enjoy our fine bourbon products.
Absolutely. And I think we should also let people get a little bit more familiar with your organizations that you all belong to. So, David, if you could give a little bit of color and background on what is the Distilled Spirits Council.
Sure. The Distilled Spirits Council, we represent most of the large distillers and importers of distilled spirits in the United States. So that means we represent the suppliers, either the people when it comes to bourbon, the people that are actually making the bourbon, or we also represent, you know, scotch, rum, gin, vodka, all the distilled spirits. So if it happens to be an import, we'll represent the importer as well. And we have an organization here in Washington, D.C. We have a public affairs staff. We obviously have a number of government relations people. We have a science office, general counsel office, and my office is the economic and strategic analysis office. So we do a lot of economic analysis. So we will represent the industry both here in Washington, D.C., but then at the state level as well, where there's oftentimes a lot going on.
And then I don't know if Heavy Grass really needs an introduction, but I want you to do it anyway.
Well, Heavy Grass is a we like to call ourselves more than just a cannabis company. We're a lifestyle brand. You know, we think we're amplifying to everyone's experience. I mean, cannabis has been amplifying, you know, creativity, other experiences throughout history since it's been introduced to the market. So, you know, we are a rock and roll aggressive brand. We are a recreational brand. We do not take a medical stance. We're not here to say our stuff's going to help treat arthritis or it's an anti-inflammatory. We're here to say, you know, if you want to go to a concert, smoking a Heavy Grass product is going to help amplify your experience. But more than anything, we're a community. We're super serving the rock and roll and metal community. We're all inclusive. Even if you don't consume our products, we want you to be a part of our events and just be a part of everything we're doing. So we're constantly out, especially in Los Angeles, where I'm based and the company's based, and we're out helping, you know, support bands, producing events, and activating at other music festivals, but also, you know, being an additive and amplifying experience for bands in the studio when they need that creativity. Or sometimes.
Wait, you're supplying bands with Heavy Grass as they go into the studio. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Sometimes you need to write a really great solo, and a lot of times instead of, you know, this is what they use as their outlet to get creative, and they smoke cannabis. But another thing that we utilize cannabis for is the relaxation part, where a lot of these guys are using it to go to sleep. Like myself, I've been an active cannabis user since I was 12 from Colorado. And cannabis has always been my go-to to help relax and go to bed. My mind's constantly racing. I work hard. I was going to school or playing football or whatever it was. And cannabis was always that, you know, allowed me to kind of relax and go to bed and start my day over.
All right. So you're not a medical cannabis, but let's say that I'm a 65-year-old heavy metal fan, mm-hmm. and I have glaucoma. Could I enjoy your product at a concert and maybe have some side benefits of the medicine?
I'm sure you could, but we're not going to out there basically tell you that this is going to help with glaucoma. If you're smoking cannabis in that realm, we're expecting you to go out and it's adding to your, you know, we call whiskey and weed pairing. So I constantly like pairing my whiskey with my Jack and Cokes if I'm going to a concert. So it adds to my experience. It creates a different euphoria for me. And that's always been a part of my culture and the way I've experienced live music. So I think for a 65-year-old heavy metal fan going to an Ozzy Osbourne concert, he's probably has a cannabis alternative that's helping with his glaucoma. And he's a part of our community just to hang out and enjoy the concert with us.
So David, you heard that side of things, and you know, the spirits community, you know, is very, very much about drinking responsibly, consuming responsibly. Is there a concern from the Distilled Spirits Council, you know, that the connection, the combination of marijuana and spirits, you know, could lead to a non-responsible experience?
Well, obviously, any product can be consumed responsibly, and any product can be consumed unresponsibly. You're right. We discourage. We encourage responsible drinking. If you think you have a drinking problem, or if you think you're going to have a few drinks and drive, we discourage that. Uber is a wonderful lifesaver for a lot of people. So you have a lot of options today in order to keep your consumption of anything responsible.
Now, Clay, let's go back to something you said. You said you started smoking at 12. Now, yeah. Even by today's standards, that would be pretty well illegal.
I mean, yeah, I mean, very much illegal. And even in Colorado during that time, it was illegal. I still remember, and this is not the way you're supposed to consume and introduce yourself to a product. Just like when you're drinking whiskey for the first time, you're not going to the backyard moonshiner to try it for the first time to get the ultimate experience and really get the benefits of what you're looking for. I know alcohol is a slippery slope when it comes to that, but cannabis kind of falls into a different category in our eyes. You know, to David's point, we're about healthy consumption as well and safe consumption. You know, medical drugs do not dry warnings on their bottles. You know, we have warning labels on ours. The alcohol industry constantly does great advertisements pushing safe consumption and driving and drinking and driving responsibly, or calling the Uber like you mentioned. So we're just a little different when it comes, because we pair, and I know when you don't want to pair with alcohol with traditional prescription drugs, but I think, you know, when you look at cannabis and data kind of shows the story where there isn't really any data correlating a cannabis consumer to a death in the history of the product. There's plenty of correlations that kind of can bring other products into it, especially the prescription drug business, the fentanyl and like the OxyContins and the different types of opiates. That's an epidemic, and that's really why I think cannabis is kind of coming as an alternative now with the way technology's caught up. People are educating themselves and saying, hey, this may have been a prohibition product for so long because it maybe have messed with so many other categories like the paper industry and the logging industry at the time, and now the prescription drug business. So it's an exciting time. It's all about education. That's what we're all about, is just educating people on our product. At the same time, we're not a medical product.
Now, to be clear, there have been, according to the DEA, there's not reported overdose deaths in marijuana, but there are deaths that are linked to, you know, overuse and driving. The Arkansas Department of Health just issued an advisory on cannabis. You know, so there are some things there where overconsumption can be, you know, can be fatal. And there's also some studies that show that the use of marijuana at a certain age can, you know, trigger schizophrenia in some people. I mean, David, when you see those things and when the spirits industry hears those things and they hear the discussion of it, there's not as, you know, marijuana is not as fatal as alcohol. Is there a sense of, I don't know, pushback from the alcohol industry to, you know, that, because at the end of the day, a lot of these marijuana, when you're talking up marijuana, they a lot of times push down on spirits.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear. Obviously, impaired driving is a big concern of ours, because what tends to happen is right now we have a breathalyzer out there. Breathalyzer technology has been around for, I don't know, 50, 60 years now. In fact, it was the Distilled Spirits Council and some of its predecessors that actually invested the money that developed the original breathalyzer. What tends to happen now is if someone is pulled over with a suspicion of DUI, you can do the breathalyzer fairly quickly. If they test positive for alcohol, all automatically becomes an alcohol impairment, you know, because they simply don't have the ability to test for anything else. We think that's an important issue from a public policy standpoint, not just from the fact that we don't want to take all the blame for impaired driving if it's not our products that are causing the real impairment, but we just think that from a public policy standpoint, you need to know what people are doing. You need to know in order to, because so much of trying to reduce abusive drinking or abusive consumption of anything is to know what people are doing, and then you can properly educate them. So from that standpoint, we need to know what's causing impairment. Everyone I've talked to that's in the marijuana industry now is really on board with that notion. And, you know, they're advocating for research that could develop the, for lack of a better term, marijuana breathalyzer.
Let's go to something else that Clay brought up, because he said he was a big proponent of pairing marijuana with whiskey as an enjoyment.
Just where like does chocolate. This,
Yeah. Yeah. Like parents. So, hey, so, you know, it's a good
got
parent.
My coconut, got my chocolate, got my Mary Jane.
Marijuana. Maybe it's a coconut marijuana, or maybe it's a coconut chocolate cannabis cookie. Who knows?
It could be that too.
That's an aggressive cookie.
So where does the Distilled Spirits Council stand on the pairing of spirits and marijuana?
Well, right now we haven't taken a position really, but in general, we would discourage you, particularly if you're going to be driving, from using both products. You know, ultimately,
let's just say you're in your apartment all by yourself. You got a little something here and you got a little something there. And they want to pair both of them. Does the Distilled Spirits Council have a position on that?
We don't have an official position on that. You know, we in general discourage the use of both of them if you think you're going to be driving at all. A lot of this is a matter of personal preference. You know, ultimately, you have to know what your limits are. You have to know how you can consume any product responsibly.
David, I got another kind of question for you too, because Clay brought up a good point, and you know, he's the proponent of the whiskey and spirits pairing. However, you don't see anything out there on the spirits side of the house that are saying like, oh yeah, like we are going to embrace a lot of things that's happening inside of the cannabis world. You don't see, I'm not even going to put a name out there of saying they're doing this, but should there ever be, or is it just bad juju all around to actually have a brand say we're going to try to align themselves with marijuana?
Well, we're still doing a lot of research. I mean, obviously this is a relatively new field. The federal government is finally starting to do more research into impairment levels. We're going to wait until the science is in before, you know, we really make any kind of recommendation on that.
And it's important to note that everybody reacts to these things differently. You know, most of the studies that are out there, you know, basically have that kind of caveat, is that not everyone responds to weed and booze the same way. You'd mentioned you guys are studying this. What are you all looking at from as a trade organization?
Well, we're not the ones doing the actual research. It's really the federal government that's doing the research. You know, ultimately what we hope to find out is, you know, just what the various level impairments are, what level of consumption is safe, what level is not safe. Those are the sorts of things that, you know, you ultimately want to look at.
And I'll say this too, Constellation Brands, which, you know, is a multi-billion-dollar company. It has interest in wine, it has interest in beer. And it's been making a heavy play into the American whiskey scene with the purchase of High West, investments in Nelson the Greenbrier and Bardstown Bourbon Company, among others. They have bought stakes in marijuana companies. So that kind of tells you that the writing is on the wall, that these spirits brands support this. Now, so let's talk about how this is going to look when this becomes federally legal, if it becomes federally legal. How will the spirits companies use marijuana in their portfolio? David, I'll give you the first crack at that in terms of what you might think.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, we don't make the buying decisions, the purchasing, the investment decisions for our member companies. So that's really a question that, you know, you would want to address to them. You know, certainly
it's
right
funny.
Now,
I asked several of them to come on, but none of them would come on. They all said you.
Oh, so oh, wonderful.
So they said you talk to you.
You know, right now, from what we've seen, however, with regard, you know, any company is always going to look for new products to sell. And if a company believes that, you know, a cannabis-based product will fit into their portfolio, whatever it might be, you know, that's ultimately up to them. We obviously, because we are the Distilled Spirits Council, we concentrate on distilled spirits. So, yeah, very much aware that the that Constellation has made a rather large investment. I think it was $4 billion, and they're looking to develop that side of their business.
Clay, what do you think? What does a spirits and marijuana product look like as we see these investments coming in from larger companies?
I think it's not even about the current spirits and the current portfolio. I think they're looking at a category and being first to the party before a lot of their competitors are, and saying, hey, you know, we all kind of fall in the same category, which in the rec category, which is social, you know, social gatherings used for social purposes at times, you know, or sitting at home to relax. And the wine industry is very similar to how some of the cannabis companies are operating, not a heavy grass per se. I think we operate more like a whiskey company would. But I think Constellation going in is looking at it as we're going to go in and be first to the party where they can own a category and leverage what they already know. I mean, these companies know massive distribution. They know how to market brands. They know how to deal with compliance issues and work about legalities. So I think they're just getting prepared for all 50 states to open up, and then it can be really game on for these brands. I think with CBD and the Farm Bill passing and all these things that are just happening now recently with legislation, I think you're going to see not a lot of infusion products in the spirits industry, because they haven't, I don't think they're going to allow that to be legal yet. I think there needs to be more research done.
Do you mean like a cannabis flavored whiskey? You don't think that'll happen?
CBD infused whiskey. You know, there's ways to do it still. I mean, there's books out there teaches you how to infuse your whiskey with cannabis or any spirit or beverage. But I think it's not going to be necessarily that coming first. I think they're going to introduce a new product through their umbrella somehow, which could be different than, you know, another Constellation wine product. If they allow,
you think the play is not necessarily to combine the two, but to have a stake in the category as they would anything else.
I think these companies know distribution better than anybody, and big business like that, especially the tobacco business as well, they're going to come in and put real infrastructure on a mass scale once all 50 states open up. And Altria just invested on the opposite end on the tobacco side. Not to jump around, it's a different conversation. They're doing the same thing in Canada as well, getting prepared. It's a very unique time to see those two companies go up there and throwing down billions of dollars into the category.
Clay, there's another kind of thing I want you to really touch on just a little bit, because we are really an education program, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that are going across the United States.
We are on PBS and all these other educational funded places.
iTunes, the new home of PBS. But there's, you know, I walk around downtown. It could be in Kentucky. You could be in states that aren't legal, yet you see signs that says like, oh, we now carry CBD oils. Yeah. Give people an idea of like, what does it stand for? And really, what is that product versus the traditional, you know, what people really think what marijuana is?
The difference is basically the psychoactive. CBD has zero psychoactive properties. So it can be used strictly for the health benefit side of cannabis and the product in the cannabis. So, you know, there's different cannabinoids that go into the plants and different plants out there that do different things and provide different reliefs. So the CBD can be extracted, and it's not necessarily a smokable. I mean, you have CBD vape pens out there for people that want to consume it that way, but a lot of it's going into topicals, creams, you know, more health and wellness side. A CBD pill, for example, can help you stay focused and help with the anti-anxiety at the same time. So, but without you feeling like you're quote unquote stoned, right? The THC side, which is still federally illegal, is the psychoactive side. And that's the stuff that makes you feel high. So I guess that's the easiest way I can help your audience, you know, signify the split between the two. This THC, which is still federally illegal. My company, Heavy Grass, is a THC driven company, so we go on feeling the effects of using cannabis. CBD is the other side, where it can help with anti-inflammatory. It's used for more of the health and wellness side and the prescription benefits.
And so, you know, you're a spirits drinker as well. Kind of talk about what you think that your business has had on if you think it actually has an impact on the spirits industry as well. I mean, when people have a choice, and then they're going to go to the store and they're going to see two things on the shelf. Are they going to choose one or the other? Or do you think there's still room for both of these, that it's really not going to inhibit any sort of growth?
I mean, me personally, I don't think it really inhibits. I know that for some people, they'll use cannabis and only consume cannabis that night. But those people are trying not to drink. So those people already understand. And the big thing is understanding, educating ourselves on consumption, which we've talked about a lot. David brought it up. You know, some people know they can't drink whiskey, so they drink clear liquor. And some people can't drink liquor at all. Some people can't drink beer. So, I mean, I think it's understanding how to use it. Some people can't smoke weed and drink whiskey. I think I've just over time have learned how to pair it properly without me getting completely blown out of my mind. But it goes back to education.
It's your Viking genes as well, Clay.
Yeah. No, but it goes back to education and understanding, hey, if you know, and I had to learn the hard way. I'm not going to lie. Just like I had to learn the hard way when I first drank tequila for the first time. I drank too much and I threw up. You know, I smoked too much and I passed out while I was drinking whiskey. So I think it goes back to healthy consumption. If you're going to smoke and pair, you're definitely not driving, and we're not trying to advocate for that either. But we also create a strain of weed that pairs well with whiskey. Our Blackjack strain, which for your audience that doesn't know what cannabis looks like, this is what cannabis looks like, it pairs well with bourbon and whiskey because it's a spicier flavor when you consume it, and now it pairs well with the oakiness of the barrels. So we've pulled a strain out specifically because we understand that our cannabis community is already a member of the whiskey community, and they're going to engage with both. So to answer your question, I think it's going to be case by case. I think sometimes they're going to go in, they're just going to want to grab a bottle of Blanton's, or they're going to go in and say, hey, I'm hanging out with my boys. I want to roll a joint. I'm going to get an eighth of heavy grass. I'm going to get a bottle of I don't know, Pappy's, and let's go have a good time with my boys tonight and play some cards.
All right, David, what do the numbers say? Because I know that you're in the spreadsheets and the databases. So what does that look like?
Hey, it's Kenny here, and I want to tell you about the Commonwealth's premier bourbon tasting and awards festival. It will be happening on August 24th in Frankfort, Kentucky. It's called Bourbon on the Banks. You get to enjoy bourbon, beer, and wine from regional and national distilleries while you stroll the banks along the scenic Kentucky River. There's also going to be food vendors from regional award-winning chefs. Plus, you get to meet the master distillers and brand ambassadors you've heard on the show. But the kicker is, Bourbon Pursuit, we're going to be there in our very own booth as well. Your $65 ticket includes everything, all food and beverage on Saturday. Plus, you can come on Friday for the free Bourbon Street on Broadway event. Don't wait. Go and buy your tickets now at bourbononthebanks.org. And through June 30th, you can get your discounted ticket offer, two tickets for the low price of $110 when using the code BOB2019 during checkout at bourbononthebanks.org.
Ryan here. Have you ever been traveling or on a date night or just wanted to pack your favorite booze or wine or cocktail and it just turns out to be a big mess? Well, we have a perfect solution for you. The Aged Noir Travel Decanter is made of 500 milliliter hand-blown glass encased in two double-wall stainless steel tumblers, so you got glasses already there with you. We're running a special promotion for Bourbon Pursuit where you can get yours at pursuit.traveldecanter.com. Go get yours today.
There are more craft distilleries popping up around the country now more than ever before. So how do you find out the best stories and the best flavors? Rackhouse Whiskey Club is a Whiskey of the Month club, and they're on a mission to uncover the best flavors and stories that craft distilleries across the U.S. have to offer. Along with two bottles of hard-to-find whiskey, Rackhouse's boxes are full of cool merchandise that they ship out every 2 months to members in 40 states. In Rackhouse's June box, they're featuring a distillery that claims to be the first distillery to stout a whiskey. Rackhouse Whiskey Club is shipping out two bottles from there, including its Beer Barrel Bourbon and Beer Barrel Rye, both of which were finished in barrels that were once used to mature America's number one selling bourbon barrel aged stout. And if you're a beer guy like me, you would know that's New Holland's Dragon Milk. Go to RackhouseWhiskeyClub.com to check it out and try a bottle of Beer Barrel Bourbon and Beer Barrel Rye. Use code PURSUIT for $25 off your first box. All right, David, what do the numbers say? Because I know that you're in the spreadsheets and the databases, so what does that look like?
Yeah, well, that's a sad commentary on my life, I think. But, you know, we have followed this with great interest for a number of years now. And we've looked at the three states that have the longest history of recreational legalization, namely Oregon, Washington State, and of course, Colorado. And in all three of those states, we see no impact on our product. In fact, we took a look at the only way you could really determine what's happening to spirits, beer, or wine volumes for that matter, is to look at the excise tax collections, because that's really the only source of data that's going to include the entire market. And when we've done that, we see that, well, gee, distilled spirits consumption on a per capita basis since the legalization of recreational marijuana in those three states is up a little bit. And then when we, you know, we've been gaining market share from beer for, God, the last 9 years, and probably, I don't know, 15 out of the last 16 or 17, when we look at total beverage alcohol consumption in those states, we see that on a per capita basis, it's either roughly flat or up slightly. So there's really just no evidence in those three states that marijuana legalization has had any impact on us whatsoever.
Okay, well, I guess we can just end the podcast now. We got our answers.
But I like, but to that point, I like to blame if the beer. I know the craft beer industry is one of those categories on a national scale. And David, you know a lot more about this than I do. If that number's falling, I can blame craft beers because they're cannibalizing themselves. You know, there's too many options out there. There's no brand loyalty. And when you have that, it's the Wild West, and it's segmented. And that's just my opinion, but you can probably talk better to that.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, obviously I have counterparts that do the same thing that I do for the craft beer industry, as well as for regular beer. And they say the same thing, that, yeah, beer is down, but when we look at the states that have legalized marijuana, we don't see results that are any different from states that don't have legalized recreational marijuana. So as a result, they don't tend to really be so concerned. You know, they haven't seen any impact from the legalization of marijuana. The results are always the same, regardless of whether or not it's legalized or not. So I know that a lot of people claim that marijuana is supposed to have this massive impact on beverage alcohol. Who knows? Maybe one day it will, but you know, again, when you look at the states with the longest history, it is not. And, you know, particularly with Colorado, wow, when you look at could you imagine a product becoming more socially acceptable than marijuana in Colorado right now? You know, it's no one has a problem with you using marijuana in Colorado. So, you know, I think we're getting some wonderful data from Colorado right now, just because in my mind, it's almost a fully developed marijuana market when you look at the rate of growth and whatnot in retail sales. It's declined, or it's not, the rate of growth is slowing fairly dramatically, which is more or less a sign of a developed market. Yep. And you know, pretty clearly, it's not had any impact on beverage alcohol sales.
David, kind of another question about that. You know, you had talked about claims and what people say. What are some of those claims that maybe people were worried about that they want you to lobby against to say that marijuana could impact their distilled spirits sales?
Yeah, well, first off, there has never been an effort, at least on the part of the Distilled Spirits Council, to try to hinder in any way, shape, or form you know, marijuana legalization. We typically don't take a position on it. You know, we do have several recommendations which the marijuana industry agrees with. You know, we want fair taxation. We'd like to make certain that there are, you know, we have an advertising code. We advocate for sensible advertising code, and you know, we advocate for, you know, keeping it out of the hands of younger people. Just really sensible regulations that, to be honest with you, from what I've seen, most of the people advocating for legalized marijuana agree with. So, you know, from that standpoint, there has never been, I know I've heard rumors about Big Alcohol trying to stop marijuana. Well, I guess you can consider me part of Big Alcohol, and we've never had any such effort.
And I haven't heard that either to counter that. I haven't heard about big alcohol or really the spirits industry trying to handcuff our growth. It's really been the prescription drug industry handcuffing us in other categories outside. I've heard rumors of certain craft beers and certain big beer business, but it's really, I haven't heard much of it. I've heard it all on the other side, on the prescription drug side.
Well, I can't remember the exact story, but it was when Bernie Sanders was running and there were some distribution companies that were, that their emails became public or something like that. And that's really where the big alcohol against marijuana came in. David, do you remember that?
I do know that the distributors from time to time have voiced their opinion that, you have a three-tier system for beverage alcohol. Wouldn't it be great to have a three-tier system for marijuana as well? I think that might be really what you're getting at. And, it's only natural that, they would want a piece of the business.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it here, and this was not something that I had at the top of my head.
Well, while you look for that, I'll throw another question to David, because there was a question that came up in the chat. You talked about Colorado and how it's been sort of sweeping, and it's just part of the culture, and it hasn't really had a whole lot of impact on the economics of spirits themselves. There was a question that says, but if you work for a national company, it could actually prohibit them from utilizing marijuana with inside of their state because it's against the corporate drug policy. So I have no idea really what the demographics are of big companies that are based in Colorado, or if there's the workforce works for national companies that wouldn't allow that. So how accurate do you think that data really is?
And real quickly, it was a part of the WikiLeaks dump, and there was evidence in there that they were trying to undermine marijuana legalization, and it was largely connected to Bernie Sanders' belief in ending prohibition on marijuana. So that is accurate. It was the people linked to it was the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America. So go ahead.
Now, what was the question again?
About the data accuracy of Colorado residents.
If you're a corporation, and particularly if you're operating heavy equipment or something of the sort, you have the right to protect yourself. I mean, you're out there, you have a potential huge liability. Is it right for them to have a zero tolerance policy? That's a difficult question. If they are going to be working, if you're going to be working for a company and there's the potential that, you could do some sort of physical harm, that's every corporation's worst nightmare.
No, absolutely. And there was another question that came in the chat, and this one is more directed at Clay here. And it was talking about kind of like experimentation and figuring out how are you mixing or infusing. And he said that there is a blueberry weed infused vodka that's out there. He's got one that's a nightcap that has a relaxing CBD oil in his brandy. Do you sort of see this as the future of what people can experiment with, kind of using their own oils and their own stuff?
I don't know legally where he could sell that. I mean, it sounds like that's a black market product. I mean, that's kind of our problem right now is we deal with black market, where legally you can't buy that market in a store because you can't infuse liquor and alcohol have to be in a separate wall with cannabis. We're not allowed to coexist together still. So people are going to do that. You can Google it right now and teach yourself how to make it. You're going to find products out there that are going to hit the market and stores are going to sell them. I live in Venice Beach, and there's a ton of black market products out here that are just normally sold down the street that are in regular stores, just because it's the part of the culture here. So I think until we get a real full legislative kind of structure around it, just like the ABC laws and all that, you're going to have kind of the Wild West with us for the moment, until more states open up and the government kind of creates some structure with us.
What is that goal? to sit there and try to move this across more state lines for your business or for the industry in general?
The goal is education and ending the stigma. The problem is you have stoner stigma and the Cheech and Chong moments and all that stuff, which is a part of it. You know, that's
Reefer Madness. That's what I remember.
It's funny because our company, we take Reefer Madness and we use that as our advertising campaign. So we've kind of flipped it where, yeah, it's bad, dangerous, stay away. It's cannabis. It's going to ruin your life. Like, no, it's education and understanding the incredible benefits of the plant, depending on who the user is. And if he's properly educated, he can find something that may. And our battle's never been with the spirits and beer industry, at least on my side. Our battle's 100% been on the prescription drug side. So, you know, for us, it's just ending the stigma where I can call my homies at any of these whiskey companies and saying, hey, let's do an incredible collab together. Let's bring in some artists. Let's do some art. Fred comes in and he does a whiskey tasting and I can bring a cannabis expert in. We do a cannabis tasting and collide them. That's the ultimate goal, is where these worlds can collide for me. Because the whiskey culture, especially in my world, the whiskey culture and the cannabis culture kind of coexist together at all times, just like beer. And I think there's ways of us helping each other grow through education, but our big problem is stigma. And people thinking that this is, you know, the old, this is your brain on drugs commercial. Any questions? Well, to Fred's point, smoked weed when I was 12 for the first time, did not become a stoner, went to college, played college football, have been on my own since I was 18. And it's funny, I'm from Colorado, so I'm a little different. So moved from Colorado to California, so I'm a little bit fortunate in that. And so it's never fully affected me. It's only helped me control things without me taking a pill.
Yeah. I will say, I was just at a conference in Washington 2 weeks ago, where at least the short-term political goal for the marijuana industry seems to be to be able to deduct their expenses. Oh, yeah. You know, that's a big concern right now. Also, they would really like to get off of marijuana off of Schedule One. So that you can, it makes it easier to do research, and then it also financially they can start using the banking system. So they do have a number of short-term political goals.
But it goes back to education, and before these politicians that are kind of driving the ship here, they've got to be educated on the benefits, or we've got to create change. And that's where our big handcuff has always been with prescription drug lobbyists and before then the paper industry and the logging industry, because with hemp being legal, you're going to see a big change in that world very quickly.
What do you mean by the way, that with hemp being legal, what sort of big changes do you think you can see?
Well, hemp is a very, very strong structure, very similar to what you would get with wood and paper. But it grows faster. It's cheaper to make. It doesn't take up the same amount of land. There's a lot of different usages for it as well. So does it make stronger rope? Can it make your paper? Can it replace other things that have been big industries in this country for a while that aren't necessarily great for the environment at the same time? Hemp provides an alternative to that.
And by the way, there are hemp bourbons that will be hitting the market soon. MB Roland has took the hemp seeds and added it to a mash bill, and they are resting in their warehouses right now.
But the big thing you got to understand is what I was talking about, infusion. Hemp and cannabis are not the same thing. They've been declassified. They're separate, and that's where the farm bill allowed the hemp to come in. David, I think you're about to say something.
No, I was just going to say the hemp does not have the THC in it. Yeah, so as a result, there's no psychoactive properties. So,
and it's not necessarily CBD either. So it's not coming from that cannabis plant. So it's just a different direct. It's different. And that's where they separated, allowed it to be used in all 50 states now.
So Fred, you know, I kind of want to get your take on this. You know, we've got David's take that it's not going to have any sort of effect in the broader market. I know that you are well connected to other distilleries and people that have, you know, their financial stake is in their spirits. Have you talked to any of them, not without naming names or anything like that, where they could potentially see that this is a future risk for their products?
Yes, I know one in particular who is not a Distilled Spirits Council member, who is adamantly opposed to legalization of marijuana based solely on the fact of what he believes it will do to spirits. And this is a company that will put up a big fight when the time comes and will do everything it can to block people from infusing marijuana and alcohol, you know, because this is a, I would say a very conservative thinking company that still looks at the 1930s, you know, saying like, you know, they try to do things that would, you know, that could fly even under in the blue states, you know, so they're overly conservative and fear that, you know, there may be regulation put upon them. And the fact is kind of a lot of what David said, there's still more studies to be done. And everything I hear Clay advocating for are things that he would not necessarily, I don't think anybody, once the marijuana is in someone's hand and once the spirit is in someone's hand, you know, that then becomes an individual responsibility. I think what you're going to see the spirits community do is I think you will see a rift between the combination of those two things in a bottle. And that the marijuana infused bourbon, the marijuana flavored vodkas and stuff. I think that's where you will see more of the fight go on within the spirits industry.
And I guess the question for you is it really a question of the spirit in general and the category and classification, or is it a pocketbook? Because as Joe goes to the store to figure out what he wants to do this Friday night, you got a bottle of bourbon or you got an eighth of weed. What's the choice? Is that what they're really worried about?
That's a good question. David, go ahead.
I will say oftentimes when you look at survey data, it indicates that, you know, yes, these cannabis and alcohol are very much substitutes. However, when we've done focus groups and you ask people who are marijuana users about their use of alcohol, oftentimes they're confused by the question because they say, well, you know, cannabis is cannabis, marijuana is marijuana, and alcohol is alcohol. And we use them on different occasions. Now, obviously, there's always going to be some overlap, without a doubt. But I think perhaps the instances of overlap and therefore the substitutability are a little bit overblown. And, you know, they're just not what people actually thought that they were.
So you said occasion. So like a three-year-old's birthday party, is that not the occasion for Rip and Jays
where you should be using either one of them, but yeah.
Clay's like, I don't know about this.
It blows my mind because this is a category. It's the data's out there. This is going to be federally legal at some point. Like the majority of the states of the union right now are at least in a medicinal state right now. This is going to happen. If I was an alcohol company, just like Constellation's doing, I'd be learning everything I would about it so I can be the go-to of these cannabis consumers. If there was a brand out there that said, hey, pair your whiskey with us and it competed with my go-to, I would give it a serious consideration because they're connecting with me on a personal level now. And to me, that's how you connect to a consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, I think we'll start wrapping up. And Fred, unless you had any other questions that you kind of want to tailor it off with.
I want to delve into this pairing a little bit more because I think for a lot of people who regularly pair their steaks with bourbon, they're having a hard time figuring out how the hell do you pair smoking weed with whiskey because you smoke with a cigar.
You smoke a cigar?
A cigar has flavor on the a cigar has a flavor on the leaf. Are you suggesting that you guys have flavor on the
plant has a flavor. So we all have unique flavors. You have the strains, right? So the big thing in cannabis right now is we're trying to get away from the whole, if you don't know what indica, sativa mean, you know, indica is more of the relaxation, kind of put you to sleep strain. And sativa is more of an upbeat, creative, keep you up, thought process control. And then you have these hybrid strains, which are more body highs and they can, you know, lean one way or the other. But there's flavor profiles in these cannabis strains. So there's, just like when you taste bourbon, Fred, you get hints of cinnamon or chocolates or something like that. You know, we'll get fruity flavors. We'll get taste of orange and citrus and lemons and blueberries. And because the process of the cloning of these things now is there's flavoring starting to go on organically through other things, especially when you go into the extraction market and we're pulling flavors out of the plant that are organically in the plant that make it taste like, you know, juicy fruit. Now, I know that's a problem with, you know, attaching yourself to a younger audience, but from me being a gum consumer, the only flavor I can consider it's a tropical fruit flavor, but those are all natural flavors being pulled out through science. So yeah, there is ways of pairing. So one of the reasons we chose our Black Jack strain for heavy grass is one of our first strains is that it has a spicier taste to it, which, like I mentioned earlier, goes really well with a bourbon on the, you know, a bourbon neat. And that was the whole way if I could have a conversation with that. There's all other ways. There's flavor rolling papers all day, full of pesticides too, if you really go through it. I mean, Backwoods gets hit with pesticide problems in the rolling papers. You know, cannabis, the wonderful thing about cannabis is we are the most controlled industry from an agricultural standpoint. So there's so many rounds of testing going in and making sure it's clean from the moment it leaves wherever it's being grown at to the moment it hits a consumer's hand.
So there's not a barrel broker market for weed at this point. Is that what you're trying to say?
Everyone's looking for the right strains. I mean, this is another, obviously, someone should write a book on this, and there might be one out. But there's these legacy strains, legacy seeds that people are always looking for. And every strain of cannabis that's out right now kind of is derived from, I think it's 13 or 14 original plants. So if you can find one of those plants, is called Durban Poison, I think it's what it's called. But you know, everyone's on the hunt for those because those are like legacy strains. So that's our pappy, I guess.
Interesting. So Fred, you know what this means is that you've just got more research to do to figure out if you can start doing these pairings, and you got to be ahead of it. So when Kentucky gets the green light, you're the first one to capitalize on it.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that.
it's all research and development.
Yeah.
But yeah, with that, gentlemen, I want to say thank you again for joining the show today. This was a fun conversation because, like I said, we're hitting on all the sins today and being able to figure out what the impact of really what this means, especially to the bourbon consumers out there. And I think not even that, maybe the consumers, maybe it's the audience that are the distributors and the distillers out there, and they can start taking this as a fresh nugget of information on how do they either adapt to the business or do they capitalize on the business, one or the other. So with that, Clay, I want you to give an opportunity just to let people know where they can find you either on social media or how to get in contact with you or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, Heavy Grass, we're on Instagram. I think the best thing to go is go to our website, theheavygrass.com. That is our official website. You must be 21 and up to enter, so please make sure you're only 21 and up. I think the people listening to this podcast are required, but you can go there and find everything you can about Get Heavy Grass. Our lifestyle is a different website. It's called getheavy.com. That's where you can really get into the music and everything else we have going on. And then personally, you can always follow me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active, at Clay Bush, spelled like the beer, not the president. And that's how you can keep up with everything. I'm pretty active for everything we do on my socials. So
where can, is your product available in California, Colorado? Where is it available?
Right now we're only in Los Angeles. We're a Southern California branded company. We're going to be here. If you really want to get to know us, you got to come out to us and come to one of our stores in Los Angeles. If you come out, I'll take you to a show. It's a fantastic whiskey bar called Seven Grand down here. We do our own pairings and we have a good time.
Fantastic. Nice. We'll put that on the TripAdvisor reviews. All right. And David, go ahead. If there's any way that people either want to get in contact with you or just learn more about the Distilled Spirits Council.
Sure. You can find us at our website. It's the distilledspiritscouncil.org. And there's information on there as to how to contact us. And, you know, just send an email to our public affairs department and they'll be happy to get in touch with me.
Thank you, everybody, for joining in. We had a few people here on the chat giving some information. We had some people that were joining us for the live. That's one of the great aspects of joining our Patreon community is that you can get early access to all these podcasts and everything else that we're doing before then. But make sure you're also following us on social at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Bourbon Pursuit, as well as also follow Fred Minnick on all those channels. And I'll let Fred plug everything because his list is never ending of everything that he's doing.
He's the busiest man I've ever met, by the way. I
don't know about that. Listen, I've worked with these festival promoters, and I don't know how they sleep because they always are putting out fires. So I would not compare what I do the least bit to anybody who promotes a music festival. But you can find me on Amazon Prime. My show is Bourbon Up. I've got a YouTube series now called The Curation Desk. Go subscribe to my magazine, Bourbon Plus. Find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search my name, Fred Minnick.
Awesome. And with that, we'll see everybody next week.